Recording. Hi everyone. Just doing a little pre-recording before the full episode because we're going to speak to Lizzie in a moment about constellations theory. And in the recording, we spoke about the German origins of constellations theory. But off camera, we spoke about the African origins as well, but that wasn't recorded. And Lizzie just wanted to set the record straight and mention the African and European origins of constellations theory. So, Lizzie, do you just want to explain that? Obviously, people will be getting all the detail later in the real recording.
Yeah, it's going to be it's a bit jumpy about you now, isn't it? But
Yeah.
yeah, there's two origins. Well, it's one origin of constellations was Bert Hellinger, and the bit that w when we were recording, we really focused on the fact that he was German, he grew up during the rise of Hitler and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And obviously for us, we have being European, and we have a bit of a connection. And we each have our own ancestral connection with that history. So we focused on that so much that we didn't acknowledge, or we didn't get the recording bit done, about that after Hellinger, he became a Catholic priest and missionary, and he went out and lived in South Africa. And this was the other element to constellations that came about, is he observed the Zulus and their ancestor worship and their many rituals they do about connecting with the ancestors, those who've died, not just those, not just the people around you. Like modern therapy is about my current living family. And the Zulu culture was really about communicating with those who've died, those who've passed, the dead ancestors. And so he started to include that in the way that he worked, which is how we've now got to this place where lots of different therapies or modalities are looking at that transgenerational element. But that really came from, I think a lot of that came from Bert Hellinger working with indigenous people in Africa. And their knowledge might get used, but they are not acknowledged for that. So I thought it was really important that we acknowledge it and include it.
That's fine, yeah. And then that little pre-recording that we're doing now, that'll lead into the discussion a little bit later.
Yeah.
But thanks for
Yeah.
clarifying that anyway. And I'll stop this recording now and people can listen to the full thing. I'll
Thank
just
you.
stop now, Lizzie. Everyone. Welcome to North and South Podcast. I've just had some fantastic chats with Lizzie. Do you want me to use your surname, Lizzie? Because it's on
Yeah,
your
but probably
website,
call
isn't it?
me Liz, because Lizzie, you know me through family, so you know me as Liz, but most people know me as Liz.
Okay, so Liz Sleeper, who is part of something called Sussex Constellations, which she'll tell you about in a moment. And I was part of one of their sessions recently. It was absolutely flabbergasting. We'll talk about that later. I've had some great chats with Lizzie without recording, and she just flows. Very, very easy person to speak to. So, Lizzie, how are you? We're friends through my uncle, Nick, aren't we?
Yeah, I have to say, Nick kept saying to me, "You must meet my nephew Tim. You must meet my nephew Tim." And when I first met you, I thought, okay, he didn't say your name. He just kept saying, "You must meet my nephew." So he brought me to you, and I was like, okay, where's the nephew? Because I was expecting someone about 20.
Yeah, and here I was,
Yeah.
47 years of age. It's nice to be called someone's nephew, though, isn't it? Because it kind of does make you feel young. And I think when you start getting called Nana or Grandad, I think that must be quite a label to manage, I suppose. But yeah, so we met a few weeks ago, didn't we? About doing some joint work together, which we're looking into, and about me being involved in one of your constellation sessions. So we had a chat, and then I came along to one of your constellation sessions on Zoom, and it was unbelievable. And then we've had another chat since then and decided to do a podcast, and hopefully we'll do some collaborative work again in the future. So first of all, loads of people will be listening on what is constellations. So we've had a good chat about this. So what is Sussex Constellations then? Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, so first of all, people hear the word constellations and they think it's star signs. They think it's the horoscopes, and it's not. It's nothing to do with star signs, but it is a translation from the German word constellations, and it means placement in relation to another. So you can do family constellations or you can do organizational constellations, and it's all about human systems and finding our right place, which is why when we did the one online, we sort of mapped it, didn't we? People had different, and we'll explain that a bit further, you know, a bit more further down the line, but people took on different roles, and we had a little shared screen, didn't we, where people put where they felt was the right place. So you could see the map of where people were in relation to the other.
Yeah,
Does that make sense?
it was I said to you, didn't I? You said you should come and join one of our sessions where there's like a group role play kind of thing going on, and someone comes on and identifies a bit of an issue, and then other people who often don't know very much about the issue take part in this session. Now, I was like, what is going on here? And I heard a nice phrase a few years ago called the threshold of revelation, which means that sometimes you need to do something and see what happens. And it can be quite counterintuitive, and people often want to know what to do first, but it was a very revelatory experience. If someone said to me, how would you describe constellations? I would just say, like, it's something that you've got to do yourself. And I wouldn't want to put too much in their heads beforehand, but it was very much what might be called an emergent process, where you had spoken to someone with an issue within their family, etc. And then other people joined and were given roles that maybe they didn't fully appreciate and understand. And then we had like a seating plan, which kind of was presented, and people went with their gut feelings. And then these conversations started, and you said to identify feelings within the body, which you then expressed. And of course, as you pick up more information, you can start to attach meanings to these feelings. Is that an accurate summary? What would you say about that?
I think that's an accurate summary, but I should think for anyone listening, they'll just be like, what are they talking about?
I mean, I was reading an article by a scientist recently, and he's like a physicist, quantum physicist, and he said he is fundamentally a scientist. He says, but there are things that we can't explain, and there are things that we need to acknowledge we don't understand that can still be useful to us. And in many ways, when I was doing the session, I was thinking, okay, what's going on here? And I just felt things kind of open up and emerge, which was quite strange. A bit like improvisation, and also, but linked to feeling rather than just. You felt like you were doing something to help someone else as well. So that was a big part of it too. But for anyone listening, there are many people out there who might say, oh, meditation, what's all that about? And Reiki, this idea of energy and balance, and Carl Jung's idea of the collective unconscious, that there's an unconscious out there that is beyond individuals that you can kind of tap into. And I would say constellations kind of touches on those kind of things. What would you say about that?
Yeah, I'd say absolutely. And in terms of not having an explanation for it, I think this, I think about electricity. I don't know how electricity works, but I turn the lights on and off and they're really useful. It's really useful. But I don't know how the electrons go along. And so I think that's probably the same with constellations. What you started to explain is, you know, you were asked to represent a member of a family. So we had the issue holder and they spoke about what was going on in their family and the problem that they wanted to solve. And you were asked to represent the teenage boy in the family. And other people were asked to represent other members of that family. And like you say, I encouraged everybody to tap in to notice what they were feeling in their body and notice any emotions they were feeling rather than notice their thoughts, because we're also accustomed to working from our thoughts. But what you were doing is you were working with your embodied experience. And we all have these, I don't know how to explain it, but your embodied experience. And in a way, what you're doing in a constellation is you're sort of building your muscle of your embodied, of noticing your embodied experience. So you know how if somebody stands too close to you, you can't see them, but you can feel them and turn, or you try and push them away, or you step away because they're too close. And I think what happens in constellations is we're tapping into that same sense, that same sort of bodily sense of picking up information from around us. So people who work in constellations talk about the field, and you're picking up information from the field. So But instead of it being somebody standing too close, and especially when we're doing it on Zoom, so nobody's standing anywhere near you, you're really picking up, it's almost like some sort of emotions that are held in the field that are associated with the person that you're representing or attached to the person that you're representing. I'm really aware that this will sound absolutely mad to most people, but it seems to work. I've been doing this since 2006 now, and my teacher must have been doing it for 40 years now, and it does seem to work. And when you first join a constellation, if you're not asked to represent and you're just watching it, you think everybody's kind of play acting, don't you? You watch them and just think, oh, it's like you think it's like them doing improvisation, but somehow they're not. And we can almost all of us do it. We just tap into something much deeper, where we all seem to be connected. I don't know
Yeah,
how.
it's a strange thing, isn't it? Again, just to I'm not like a big Carl Jung fan, but I am interested in some of his ideas. But the idea of the synchronicities and things happen for a reason within the sessions, I found that quite profound. And my dad is he's like a full-on materialist, my dad, very non-religious and all that. But he recited a tale when my mum went into their flat when they first got a flat together many, many years ago. And she said, "Someone's been in this flat." And he was like, "Oh, behave yourself, behave yourself." And it was my mum's sister, Carmel, Nick's sister, had apparently climbed in through the window to leave something for my mum back in the days when people left windows open, etc., where you could climb through. And my dad swears to this day that my mum knew Carmel had been there somehow, but couldn't explain it. Of course, it was a sister, but she just knew something wasn't right. And I think people experience these things quite frequently, but your mind kind of just moves on from it, in day-to-day life. And you just think, oh, it's just one of those strange things that you can't, really explain. But in Constellations, it was like really honed. And I think that the fact that there was quite a few people there, I think it gave it even more energy. And there was real revelation about it. So one of the people who never had one of the roles was the one most affected. And this woman was like, "I think you said that this lady seems to be feeling something over here, like what's going on here?" And eventually that came out. And I was thinking, wow, like you can't just say things like that without feeling something. And then it all fitted in later on. It all kind of fitted into the whole. But it was an amazing experience. And at the end, there was real resolution and suggestion about moving forward, which I thought was very, very helpful too. Which again, I don't think you'd have got rationally through maybe two people doing a talking therapy. There was something very profound about what came out at the end of it. And I'm sure you have experienced so many of these that you've seen this multiple times, but it's a very hard thing, I think, to explain, isn't it?
Well, there's no way you could. Well, one of the things about constellations is you're working with the whole family system, and sometimes, a whole system and a much bigger system. And you're also working, this all sounds really wacky, but you're not just working with the living, but you're also working with the dead. And that was really clear in that piece of work that we did, the importance of checking in with the dead father of the lad that you were representing, actually. I don't know about you, but I'm getting goosebumps as I say this. I don't know if you are as well. It was so important for trying to think how to talk about this without really identifying who was there. But to summarize the story, just for people who are listening, you were representing a 14-year-old boy whose father had died and who was being brought up by his grandmother, and his aunt and her husband by marriage wanted to bring him to this country. He's being raised in another country and wanted to bring him to this country to care for him. And this 14-year-old boy clearly really needed a male role model, some sort of a father figure, didn't he? It was really, really clear. And for me, I think one, because I've thought about, I was thinking, oh, what really came out of that? And I think what came out of it for the people who brought the constellation, who asked me to do the constellation, what came out of it was that the man who will be this has been the living male role model in this young boy's life. It felt like he needed some permission from the boy's real father to step up. And I think One of the movements that happened when we did the constellation is at first he didn't really have permission to do it. We had to do I can't even remember what we did really, but something changed within the constellation. And then the living man felt he really had a blessing to step in and take a role in this boy's life, which is what the boy really needs. You know, every 14-year-old boy needs a father, don't they?
Yeah, and again, it would be hard for me to explain it to someone who hasn't done it. I remember going to this, speaking to this guy who does Reiki, and he said he was a big critic and cynic, skeptic for years with Reiki. And I'm not advocating Reiki in one particular way or another, but he said, when you feel it, he said, when you feel it, that changes you. And I've done Reiki courses with a guy called Kevin Morris in Liverpool, Angelic Reiki, and I got a lot from it. And people told me things that I just thought, how can you possibly know about that? And a couple of people gave me reassurances about things that they couldn't have known about. And it was a strange feeling. And again, I think you need to hear it and it helps you to process things. But I think there's a very human element to it all that we all need to be reassured and we all need to be loved and supported. I think that also, and also to be understood and to have our mistakes and our limitations understood as well. And this was really insightful too, because you told me that constellations kind of emerged in post-war Germany. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
So what happened with constellations is there's a chap called Bert Hellinger who's credited with being the father or grandfather of constellations. There are other people that would say, well, actually, it came out of Virginia Satir's drama sculpting, and it came out of called Albert Moreno, who did drama therapy. But there's a number of things came together. But basically, Bert Hellinger, I think he was probably a teenager during the or a young man during 1930s Germany, and saw a lot of his peers getting involved in some really terrible things. Then what happened in Germany in the 1980s, within the psychotherapy movement, people were going to psychotherapy and kind of getting a bit stuck in Germany, because they would go and they'd see a therapist. There's one chap in particular, again, he's a constellator, called Albrecht Marr, and he would go to see he went to psychotherapy, and looking for what the problem was, why he was so depressed, because he had perfectly lovely parents who'd been very kind to him when he was growing up. There was no clear or obvious reason for him to have the depression that he had. He'd had a very nice childhood. And of course, the big elephant in the room was what had happened with the Nazis and what the Nazis had done. And this particular person, his father, I think, had been in the SS and had overseen the murder of an awful lot of people. So what was happening in Germany is the therapists were not really acknowledging, they were still working in a bit of a vacuum. So they were still working as if the family was the only unit that impacts who you are and how you are. And they weren't including the bigger picture, which was the Holocaust, which was being born and growing up and loving people who had perpetrated the most terrible, horrific crimes, but you still love these people because they've been kind to you. So how do you sit with those two terrible, terrible dichotomies? So that was a massive struggle. And in the 80s, there was a movement, I think, in German psychotherapy where they started to face what had happened in Germany, the Germany's history. And I think then Bert Hellinger had moved out to South Africa. He was a Catholic priest. He'd moved to South Africa. He started to work with the Zulu and noticed the work that they did with ancestors. And so he started to include ancestors into his work. And out of that arose this work, Family Constellations, where we kind of, like Virginia Satir, we will sort of sculpt or map out a person's family, but we will also include the bigger systemic influences on the family, whether it's the impact of being, what are you, second, third generation Irish? You know, there's going to be an impact. There's going to be an impact. So whether it's those sorts of impacts of where you come from and the history of your family and the history of the country, really. So there's those big sort of systemic impacts on you. And also, yeah, the impacts of people who've been excluded from the family.
We've spoken about this before, the idea of epigenetics, which is the idea that, like, if you have parents with particular predispositions, not just genetic, but in terms of, trauma, it can be passed on. So we know, for example, that obviously with chemicals, it's a little bit more direct. So if you've got a mother who's got issues with addiction, it directly impacts, a young baby, etc., developing before it's born. We know all about that, but the idea of epigenetics was just that these markers that aren't actually part of the DNA but can be passed on through generations. Now, again, it's not widely understood as well as it might be, but there are people who say that trauma can be passed on through many generations. The science behind it, although we don't know the details as well as we might do, but certainly I think if you look at groups like the way that the Aboriginals, Torres Strait in groups in Australia and say Native Americans in North America, if you go into a particular society and completely reorder it and literally fracture families, take kids off families, and you wonder why several generations later you've got high incidences of suicide and alcoholism, you can see the impacts of those things, can't you, around the world. And the impact of parent and environments on young people. You look at, say, the black situation in the United States, you can give people freedom formally in 1865. But if you look at many of those communities in the South, a lot of these are because of political structures as well. You still got, I think I read a shocking statistic recently that black citizens in the United States, their average annual income is $17,000 a year. The average for a white family is 170,000. I mean, they are stark, unbelievable structures. And when I first heard that, I thought that can't be right. And I actually checked it and it's right. So we've got all these things going on. But I think trauma, that there's something about trauma, the way it's passed on between families and generations and these histories, that we need to, it's okay doing CBT and say, right, let's have a chat with this individual and come up with some strategies to make their lives better. But you do need to appreciate the environmental factors and the wider context, don't
Oh, definitely. I mean, I don't even know where to begin with political
you?
policy. So I'll just put that to one side for now because that's so huge and there's so much in that. I'm kind of still flabbergasted by that. But what I was going to say, so on the scientific basis, I'm not very, I'm not, I haven't read the stuff, but
Yeah.
I think there've been some studies on epigenetics and how the impact of on pregnant women, the impact on their babies, the twin towers coming down. So I think if you're interested in researching that, there's certainly some research done that you can find about that. But there's also if you're less interested in the sort of cellular, analyzing cells, which is a bit beyond me, and you're just open to looking at the more sort of social side of it, I think a really simple way to look at it is a lot of men. I don't know. I don't know about younger generations than mine, but certainly my generation. I think quite a lot of men didn't always know how to interact with their families. They get married, they have children. They didn't really know how to interact with them. And if you go back a couple of 2 or 3 generations, the chances are their great grandfathers were sent off to war, sent off to the First World War, came back with PTSD. And were so taken up with what had happened and all the people that had died and all the people they'd left behind. And so how could they possibly lead a good life when all these other young men had lost their lives too young? And so so there's a sort of soul spiritual survivor guilt, for want of a better phrase, but I think that's a bit, that kind of minimizes what it is really. But there's that soul spiritual level as well as just the sort of physical PTSD. If you think, a man with PTSD post World War I returns and he has children and a son is born and the son tries to reach his father, but the father's always sort of a bit remote, always distracted, somehow you can't quite, not attainable, not reachable, right? So then the boy learns, oh, that's what being a man is. So then he goes off and he does the same thing and he becomes that sort of father. And it happens, 2 or 3 generations down. And then you get a man in a generation who's going, what is this? I want to engage with my family. I want my son to be able to engage with me. Why is this not possible? And because he's living in a situation that is kind of, there is enough peace, we're talking this country, there is enough peace within his situation, he can start to look at it and identify the original trauma and let it go. And you can either see it as a trauma that he needs to let go of, and it's often a very emotional experience in a constellation, or you can just see it as a, this is how they learn what men do. This is how they
It's
learn what men do in families.
interesting, isn't it? Because I think World War One is often considered a very different war. I don't know if you've read All Quiet on the Western Front, Remarque, and the opening, there's a quote right at the start saying this book is dedicated to a generation of men whose lives were destroyed by this war. And there was a quite an interesting statistic. I don't know if it was 83% or maybe 87% of soldiers who fought in the British Empire survived. You know, we have this idea that, oh, they all got killed at the Somme and all that. There were unbelievable battles, but most people who engaged, I think, sorry, four in five actually survived, but many of them had injuries. I think 3 million were injured out of 5 million, and they were carrying certain injuries. But it was the mental anguish of kind of being in a trench or being in a th hidden away and not being able to actually address the issue. It was like you couldn't scratch the itch, as it were, for prolonged periods of time, and what that did to people. I mean, we know soldiers have always done terrible things and suffered, and societies have suffered, but we haven't really got anything to compare it to, have we? Because we haven't got the records from, you know, what it was like for people in the centuries before then, who often lived very short lives because they were going through their own traumas, etc. But it's very, very hard for us to get a handle on these kind of things and to truly measure them, which isn't to say that these things aren't a problem. I just wonder how much of that kind of detachment from men is down to that kind of 20th century experience, certainly in Europe, of the wars. You know, it must have had a huge impact on the way people were with each other, and just seeing that and going through it. You know, it's very, very hard, isn't it, for us to kind of appreciate what it must have been like, and the impact that that had on the generations that followed. But that's what Constellations taps into. Often it taps into that kind of feeling that there's something historic or something powerful in the past that you also need to come to terms with. And also, if you look at, say, again, Australian Aboriginals is a great example. They're constantly talking to their ancestors. It's like the song lines are about engaging with the ancestors and the distant ancestors, because they say, without that, you're nothing. You need to appreciate that and understand that. Otherwise, you're not. And again, people might frown and go, yeah, that's all hocus pocus. But look at the lives we're leading now. I mean, I often think like this. Yuval Harari says in his great book, Homo Sapiens, he said, if you're a factory worker in Bangladesh, you'd have probably been better off as a Homo sapien 400,000 years ago, based on your life expectancy and the working conditions that you live in.
Wow.
Which is very interesting, isn't it, to think about? I think a lot of it depends on where you are in your life as well. You know, the way as you get older, you get a little bit more cynical and stuff. Because I certainly think as a youth, I had such a like wide-eyed enthusiasm of things. And then as you get older, you kind of like look at things a bit more cynically, and you think there was a lot about me that I didn't really understand when I was young. And I think that's what Constellations is good at, because it gets people thinking. Have you ever had like quite young people taking part in any of these sessions?
I've done a few with young people, but generally I work with older people. I don't know if that's because older people have been around the block a bit. They've tried a few things already and they're like, oh my God, I've done therapy or counselling or whatever. I've done all these things and none of it's worked. I'll try Constellations. And young people are still young and they're still going out in the world and they haven't made all their mistakes and they haven't gone, oh, hang on, maybe it's me. Maybe some of these things I'm doing it to myself. When you're young, you're not doing that. But I did something recently with a young person, and I just did a one-to-one. It was somebody who was clearly having difficulty. The words that I use might be a bit hippie-ish. I don't know better words, but she had difficulty really engaging with her life force. 22, you should be out there. You just got a lot of life in you, haven't you? And this young woman didn't. There was a lot of, she had health issues and her life force was just very, very small. And so we set up a representative for her life force. This is where it all sounds a bit mad, isn't it? But we set up a res and it was kind of on the floor. So when we did the constellation, what became clear is that there was something in the line of one of her parents. Somebody had done some really bad things a few generations back. And you know what can happen in a constellation is subsequent descendants can try to atone for the sins of their ancestors. You know, that it's that biblical thing, the sins of the fathers are visited upon the sons. So you know, one thing people might see quite a bit of in America is white wealthy families, you know, end up with drug addicted kids. And it's because actually the way they made their wealth was really immoral and on the backs of many, on the backs and on the pain of many, many other people. So the descendants try to atone for the sins done by their ancestors, and so they end up really messing up their lives. Now, this woman, I have no idea what the sins were that were committed, but certainly somehow or other, her spirit had got entangled with the crimes or the impact of the crimes on other people. So somehow, even though she knew nothing about it at all, nothing, somehow she was making her life a bit smaller. And when we set it up and we could see that there was something had happened, something dark, we just described it as something dark, that was really nothing to do with her. And she let go of any, she just gave all the darkness back to where it belonged. And I'm told she's got a lot more energy now, got more, a lot more life force.
That's powerful, isn't it? And during the sessions as well, I know that when I felt certain things, or you explain things to people, don't you? You sometimes say to people, say this sentence because you see something, say just say that. But then people can say what they like as well. But you kind of mold people and shape people through that and allow things to happen. It was quite interesting seeing when you said something and when you didn't. And there was very much a judgment that I think comes with experience. Obviously, you've done quite a few. Is that something that you gain over time?
Yeah, well, what happens there? Well, see, what happens is when you're representing, you can get really caught up in your representation. And obviously, what you're experiencing feels like the most important thing. And sometimes it's not. It might be very important for that representative, but it's not necessarily the most important thing for supporting the issue holder to go forwards. So there can be some really simple things. Like I remember being in a constellation some time ago. You know, you can have children that are really angry with their parents. And so somebody's representing their child and they will just want to go, you're this, you're that, you never did this, you never did that, you're a rubbish parent, blah, blah, blah. Right. That doesn't help anyone. That just helps the child, the adult child, stay small and stay disappointed. And it doesn't help the parent either. It just that so the representatives can get caught in a bit of a useless argument that will just go round and round in circles. So my job as the facilitator is to try to move that forward. So instead of having the child go, you're a useless parent, if I can get the representative to say something like, I missed you, because that's a truer thing. That's a much truer thing, but much harder to say because it makes you so much more vulnerable to say, I missed you. It's easy to be angry, but to say, I missed you know, that exposes your vulnerabilities. But if I can get the issue holders to say the truer sentence, then it can kind of bring the temperature down. It can bring the temperature down of these rather lightweight human arguments or disputes where everybody kind of keeping it quite lightweight and everybody stays, actually everybody stays feeling right, you know. And often people, it's something that I've heard other constellators say, which would you rather be? Would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? And often people prefer to be right.
It's a funny thing about human nature that, because I think I've heard of Joseph Goldstein, who a Buddhist teacher, say once that like anger has got its honeyed tip, but its poisoned root. In other words, like it feels good, but then after a while, when it subsides, you feel like that guilt and or that you can almost feel your body the way it's reacted to the anger. I'll give you a ridiculous example, and this is from someone who considers himself quite mindful. I live opposite a school, and I came back from dropping my son off at school this morning, and all the cars were covering all the pavements outside, and I was driving down the road, and I couldn't see if someone had driven across our driveway. And part of me was thinking, I hope there is someone, because I'm going to show them people what I'm going to tear them a new page. And anyway, as I got closer, there was someone whose the back of the car was gently going over our drive. So what happened is I put my indicator on and I pulled in and drove onto the drive. And this person just moved up a little bit. And as I got out the car, he raised a hand to say, sorry, I was just on your drive then. And I said, yeah, no worries. And I came in and I said to myself, isn't that interesting? I was that honey tip of I'm right, the ego, the assertion. Some people go through their whole life thinking that they are one consistent, unified entity, when in fact, there's that famous quote, isn't it? I contain multitudes. And Paul Cooper, what I was talking to you about earlier on, he talks about us having different sub-personalities and that you should be aware of who's on the mic, as he calls it, who's on the command deck. Because then you can say, ah, that person's on the mic. I know they're trying to help, because maybe getting angry when someone was taking your food 400,000 years ago kept you alive, but it's not serving me right if I think someone is parked over my drive and I'm going to get angry with them. And I just think it's fascinating because in Constellations, it was so constructive because we touched on things to do with people's pasts. Some of them are no longer with us, but we still showed complete respect. And it was almost like everyone's doing the best here. They might not quite realize what's going on, but everyone's trying the best here. And it was very human. And I thought it was very, very understanding of how complex we all are. And, you know, I said, that was amazing. I want to do that more regularly. But even then, just that this morning, it's just those little insights into how the brain works. We're our own worst enemies most of the time, aren't we?
We are. But I think you're right. I think what I absolutely love about the Constellations is it's always about showing complete respect. That could be a really hard thing to do. You know, when you look at some terrible things that people have done and find a way to look at them and go, the truth is, I might be no better than you. And maybe had I walked in your shoes, I may have done the same. It's a really, really hard thing to do. Even me saying it now, I'm like, oh, you know, it's a hard thing to think and a hard thing to say. And it doesn't absolve people of responsibility for what they've done. It doesn't. And also, I mean, I'm getting into quite deep stuff here, which I probably wasn't really intending to do. I thought we were going to have a kind of Constellations 101, but I think I'm going a bit deeper. One of the things that is really interesting about Constellations is you're kind of working with victim and perpetrator. And of course, a lot of what happens, a lot of the systems that we've set up in society are either for helping the victim or for punishing the perpetrator. They don't deal with both. And then, you know, where people get frustrated is, for example, in the criminal justice system, and lawyers go, well, my client did this, but actually they had a terrible childhood, and so they can't be excused, you know, you've got to understand that, which is why they did this. So there's that dance between victim and perpetrator. And in Constellations, you're always looking at both. And there are a couple of other things. When we do Constellations, I was going to say about really big things like the Holocaust, but actually even about smaller things, difficulties within a family. The healing movement, it's called a healing movement when we start to move things from to something deeper and more respectful and more profound and something that really nourishes people and allows people to step into their whole self and their authentic sort of adult part. Usually, in my experience, almost always, the healing movement has to come from the victim because being a perpetrator is so much worse than being a victim. Because being a perpetrator means you have to look at your guilt, you have to look at your responsibility for what you've done, and you have to own it and hold it. And being a victim means you can say that hurt, that impacted me terribly, and you know, it may have impacted me for the whole of my life, but the responsibility is with you. And you have to be a perpetrator to think, oh, I have done that to that person, and they're going to carry an injury for the rest of their life is a really really, really big thing.
I think that's one of the issues with the criminal justice system. Again, whatever that means, it's patchy even in countries with like a supposed rule of law. But I think when people can say, yeah, I did that, I accept I did that. I said, I'm not making excuses, but here's some of the reasons or the things that have gone on in my life. I believe there was a guy who murdered his wife in cold blood in Texas, who was given a long prison sentence, but was actually charged with manslaughter because brain scan said he had psychopathic brain. It was like one of the clearest cases of it. And they actually took that into account when charging him. This was a case in Texas. I think John Ronson covers it in one of his documentaries or one of his books. But I think the Holocaust is a case in point, because when Hannah Arendt was watching the trial of Adolf Eichmann, who was behind the organisation of the trains and taking the prisoners to wherever they were going to go to be exterminated. And he was a big driver of the Hungarian Jews, where I think about 400,000 were killed later on. Even when he knew they were losing the war, it was still right, let's do this kind of thing. And Hannah Arendt looked at him and said, he's just a normal person. Many people criticised. I said, oh, you're excusing him for his actions. And she said, no, he's responsible for what he did, but he's just a normal person. I know we've discussed this before with like the Einsatzgruppen and some of the shooting squads that went around the Eastern Front. And often the people who were involved in taking Jews and other prisoners to the woods and shooting them, kids and all kinds, were given the choice of whether they were going to do it or not. But they were asked as a group. We've got like a group of men, and you know, are you going to be the one or two? I go, actually, I'd rather not do this. And then the others think, oh, he's a weakling. This is after you've been subject to like years of propaganda, anti-Jewish propaganda. And it's not black and white. And I think one of the big breakthroughs in life is when people can actually say, yeah, I'm limited. I've got weaknesses. I don't know all my limitations and my weaknesses. I've also got strengths. Because many people get accused of not being able to admit they were wrong, but many people don't always admit when they're right either, because they're too kind of humble. And that's where like people like Trump and narcissists come in, who make out that they're right all the time. We've got to be vigilant to those types. But at the end of the day, I think humans need to be humble and say, yeah, I'm responsible for things that I've done badly within a context. But I've got strengths, and to be okay with that and to start to come to terms with that. Because after the war, like East German said, oh, that was the West, capitalists, Nazism. And then in the West, it was all like, oh, that was just down to Hitler. And it was kind of buried for many years. And then after like a certain amount of time, people started to go, okay, like what actually happened there? And there were so many examples of people putting their head on the line to help people, to help Jewish people. And there was evidence of others who just turned a blind eye. And there's a great scene in the documentary series, The Nazis Are Warning From History, I think it was made in 97, where there was a guy said, like, we saw the trains going away. He said, what could I do? I'd have lost my job. I couldn't support my family. I could see them outside the window. And there was a great scene where a woman who actually caused another woman to go to a concentration camp where she died, they actually interviewed her. I don't know if you saw it. And she was like, oh, yeah, that's my signature, but I don't know I don't know how that got there. And you were basically saying, is your signature? You got this woman sent to a concentration camp because she was a bit different, like a lesbian or whatever. And then it started raining. This woman said, oh, it's raining, now I'm going. She just walked off into the distance as if like, oh, yeah, that happened then and I don't want to talk about it. And I think that's why I think constellations are so powerful, because at a micro level, we've all got those kind of things going on in our lives. Some of them that we're aware of and some of them we're not.
Well, one of the things that you were saying about the Einsatzgruppen and who's going to be the guys who go, actually, I'm not going to do this. So that's one of the things that when you were saying it, I was thinking about those Stanley Milgram experiments that were done, you know, where people just did what authority said. But Hellinger says, seems to be a truth, is he talks about guilt and innocence. Mm. And it's one of the things that we attend to all the time in constellations. And so constellations are about belonging, and about belonging in your group. And there are rules of belonging. You know, if you go to work or if you're in a club, there may be very clear written out rules. If you grow up in a family, the rules of belonging are not written out. They're not clear, but you learn them. And likewise, the rules of belonging in the Einsatzgruppen or whatever, or it might be the rules of belonging in, say, an ISIS group now, are they're very clear what the rules are. And if you break those rules, you don't only jeopardize your membership of the group, but you feel guilty rather than innocent. And if you follow the rules of the group where you belong, then you can feel innocent regardless of what terrible things you've done, because the rules of that group were to do this, if that makes sense. So when you're working with constellations, you're always looking at guilt and innocence. I guess that's back on that thing of being right or being right or being happy. And often, being right, you can feel innocent, and being happy, you may feel a lot more guilty, but it gives you weight as a person. And it's ultimately freeing, both for you and often for the people you have hurt. It's freeing for the future, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was thinking that about that. I can't remember the name of the woman, Giselle, the woman in France who had been.
Oh, the woman who was drugged by her husband and repeatedly raped
Yes,
by
that's right.
strangers. That case.
And that there were two men who came along and said, "I can't do this," and wouldn't do it. People on Twitter are going, "Well, why didn't they, what terrible men, because they didn't report it." And I was thinking, well, at least they said, "I can't do this," because the rules of the group were, this is what you do, so.
I think what you cited earlier, the Stanley Milgram experiments on following authorities, people can find out. I've spoken about those before on other podcasts, but the power of going against the group. I mean, have you seen that one where if you have two lines the same length and one of them's got a triangle at the an arrow pointing outward and one looks longer than the other, but they're both exactly the same size? And if a few other people are told, say that that one's longer than that one. Eventually, the other person goes, "Oh, yeah, you're right." Even though it's very clear that they're both the same. The power of groupthink through evolution is so powerful. And I used to say years ago, "Oh, I wouldn't have gone along with the Holocaust." And then when you have kids, it's like, would I have wanted my kid to go without a father? Or could I have supported my kid if I'd have stood up?
What if they threaten to take your children away and do something to your children? I mean, yeah, that's that.
You know, that changes things entirely, doesn't it? And again, I don't think we can ever really think about what we would have done in those circumstances of the Holocaust. But as Aaron says, I think what she did so brilliantly was to place the Holocaust at the heart of everyday life and go, it's a bit more complex than what we thought, you know. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of healing that can be done in looking at these things. And it's no surprise to me that constellations came out of Germany in the 80s, where people are starting to think, wait there, what's gone on here? What's this big black hole in our history 40 years ago? You know what I mean?
That no one was wanting to talk about or look at. Like I said, I mean, one when I was doing the training, there's one day we had to go off and think about something that we did that we were ashamed of and really regretted and hurt someone else, and we had to come in and talk about it. Oh my God, that was the hardest exercise ever.
It's the judgment, isn't it? It's the judgment. I mean, I'm quite open about things. People say you shouldn't share that or you shouldn't talk about that. And I just think, you know, again, it depends where you are and what your place is. You know, again, if you're Donald Trump and your dad raised you a particular way and you were schooled by Roy Cohn to never admit that you're wrong, to gaslight people, to go after your enemies to the nth degree. For him to go in a courtroom and be found guilty, he can't even process it, which isn't to say he's not a very dangerous individual, but
And for him to
you
say
know.
sorry, for him to say sorry, it was just that would be, beyond any rules of anything he's ever learned.
And that's why I think that people like him are powerful. There was a good I read, there was a guy who wrote a book about strongmen a couple of years ago, and he said that the idea of like this strong man is, you know when someone sounds certain, you can see how religions get off the ground here. You know when someone says, "Is the truth, trust in me is the truth," and they say, "I'm strong, I'll defend you against the other group." That's a principle of evolutionary survival, and you can see that with Trump. Like, I mean, you look at speeches of Hitler talking now, and you listen to it and you go, it's got a deep voice there. You can see how he's persuasive. Everyone in the crowd's going nuts. But if you look at his words, you go, he's just talking absolute nonsense. And when Donald Trump comes on TV, I look and go, right, what's he saying? He's talking absolute nonsense. And everyone in the crowd's going absolutely like mental. Because what does he do in all the complexity of life? Trust in me. It's a cult religious thing. And again, I think a lot of that was where Nazism was so successful. Again, in a country where a decimated economy, who had lost so much after the First World War, all these conspiracy theories. And I mean, I used to teach Nazism as a history teacher and think, goodness gracious, it's happening in the States now. You know, we've had our Munich putsch with January 6th. We've had a lot of the themes from Nazi Germany I've taught in the past. We're saying this about America today, the USA, the leading democracy. But this is where the trauma comes in. There's something deep about the human experience where if we're not careful and we don't process these things, they come out and manifest themselves in different ways in an individual and at a societal level.
Yeah. So with my constellation hat on, because once you've done constellations for a while, you do start to have this sort of different perspective.
Yeah.
Much, much broader perspective. So what I think is very interesting about America is there are very few indigenous people. So there's very few people who are connected to the land. Then America was set up by the Christian equivalent of the Taliban, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's my understanding. I've got a friend from Plymouth. She said, when they left, everybody's like, bye. Off you go. So you know, it was set up by some people with quite extreme views, and then, you know, I grew up, I'm half American, so I grew up, spent time in the 70s there, and it was all about what a great place, because immigrants can go, you can make a good life for yourself, everyone's an immigrant, or most people are immigrants in America, but you know, barring being black, because you weren't really an immigrant if you're black, and being indigenous because it's your country. But pretty much everyone else is an immigrant, and it offered opportunity. But with my constellation hat on, what happens to an immigrant is you get cut off from the land of your fathers and forefathers and I should say forebears, I suppose. You get cut off from that land. You get cut off from your history. You don't know your history, and you don't know your land. And so it kind of has an impact on being American when you meet people who've got a long historical connection with the land where they live. They have a weight about them. I can't explain it. They have a depth to them, or like a concentration, or I don't know. I can't explain it, but they're sort of more solid.
It's a very strange situation, because I think there was obviously a very strong religious association with the people who went over there initially, the Europeans who went over and invaded. I think that tie with land, one of the reasons people turned against the South Vietnamese governments and the United States and Vietnam was they often emptied the village. And for the Vietnamese people, you buried your relatives near your village. And to take them from that land, you destroyed them. So they fought back fiercely. And this idea of, I think for people who travel around the world and go somewhere away from the roots, there's something about that I've always struggled with. I can't explain what it is. I just can't quite explain it. And that might be the original human trauma, the idea that we need to get away from here now or leave here for whatever reason, because the ICE is coming or there's another group coming. And that's what the ultimate human trauma is.
Yeah, I just have increasingly got this sense about land and our disconnect from the land.
Yeah.
So basically what happened is I was in a constellation, I think it was about Ireland, and I represented the land. And I ended up just saying something about the land is fed by the blood and bones of the people. You know, so there's that cyclical relationship between the land, because we die and our blood and our bones feeds the land. And so that makes, I think that's what makes the relationship with the land. The land feeds us and we feed the land.
Mm.
So if you're disconnected, and you may be, you know, my dad's American, His grandfather had to leave a country where, they were all being massacred, so he had to leave. But there's still the disconnect from the land.
Yeah, it's a powerful thing, isn't it? Right, I think we've been going on for an hour there, Lizzie. I could speak to you for a few more hours.
I think we should stop, though, don't you?
Yeah, but we'll leave it there. But I would urge anyone, I always, again, to quote Yuval Harari, know yourself, improve yourself, and then connect with others. And I think that when I did Constellations, I felt like I'd find out more about me. I learned more about me, but also there was a connection with others, which was very profound and deep. And we'll put your website details in the notes. A phenomenal discussion. I felt like we've just spoken about everything from the cellular level up to like literally global events in terms of how we process trauma and how we come to understand ourselves as humans through things like constellations. But
Yeah.
it was a real honor to be invited to that session,
Well, it
and it
was wonderful.
was
I need to
incredible.
do some more, so we'll do some more. And
Yeah.
come along.
Will do. But thanks for coming on.
It was great talking to you. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no worries. To be continued.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely have to continue it.
Here's Lizzie. I'll see you
Cheerio.
later.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Go on.
Okay, so you were talking about people not wanting to go to school, and I worked with somebody once whose child was really, really struggling with going to school, and the parents didn't know what to do. They were struggling with the child refusing school, and so I was working with a mother, and it turned out the mother had I think the mother, when she was a teenager, had some mental health issues and had ended up being locked up or sectioned or whatever in a mental health institute where some really bad things happened to her. When we worked with the mother's experience of the mental hospital where she'd been abused, and where the mother said, "This is my experience, and it's not doesn't belong with you, my child." And the mother looked at that and tried to resolve what not re tried to resolve, but recognize she was really afraid of letting go of her child. She was really afraid of letting her child go into another place, a school. So, it wasn't 24/7 like being met locked up in a mental hospital, but she was still afraid of letting go of her child because of what had happened to her. So once we disentangled that, and she was able to see, recognize all of her fears and how she was unconsciously putting some of those fears onto her child, I think it really freed her child up to go to school.
I think that's interesting, isn't it? Because if you haven't valued school yourself for whatever reason, undiagnosed learning difficulties, like we know, like people in the past who were like dyslexic or neurodivergent. I mean, you have like people who are diagnosed as having autism or might have a learning difficulty, but in the past there were so many undiagnosed ones and grey areas, etc. How many people experience that, and then they've got kids and they think, oh, the feelings I have towards school. And again, there's a lot of socioeconomics in there. School didn't help me. School didn't help my parents. Just sending people there without doing the work. I
I don't want to
don't know.
go
Just.
somewhere where I was always accused of being naughty and thick and ignorant. Why would I want to send my precious child there?
And then they get a lot of conflict with the school authorities then. So when school phones home and goes, listen, some of them turn it round on the teacher. And blame the school, because I'm not saying that there's always like a case of the school are right and the parents are wrong, or the kids always acted up completely. Sometimes schools and people get it wrong in schools. Often just haven't got the tools or the understanding, or maybe the structure to appreciate the holism of the situation. And I
That's
think that if
right.
you can understand that, it is important, isn't it?
And the other thing is, so with constellations, one of the things about constellations are belonging to your tribe, right? So that's what we do unconsciously. It's like there are unspoken rules about what is required of you to belong in your tribe, if it's your family, or I can't think of another tribe at the moment, your team of football supporters or whatever. There are rules of belonging. And so, if you come from a family where for three or four generations education has been a really bad experience, a really poor experience, and so the family are really skeptical about education, it's something that's imposed on them from some external authority who've got a different agenda, then even if you're four or five or six, you have picked up those subtle rules of belonging. And so, belonging in your family means school's a bad place, school's a scary place. You know, whether your parents have told you consciously or not, that's the rules of belonging. And we all want to belong, so we all follow the rules of belonging in our family.
Absolutely. I think when Michael Gove's reforms 2013, he started to really kick in and made the school system far more academic. Again, Michael Gove, he's a well-to-do, privileged person.
Well,
Believe he went
actually, he
to,
wasn't that well to do, but he went to a grammar school. So
Well,
he, or
I've
no, he
heard
didn't go to
that.
grammar school. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that he went to a state school early on, but then I think later on he went to a private school. But either all, he bought into the philosophy that we need high academic standards because that's the British way. This
Yeah.
kind of the great men in the great men in the 19th century were privately educated and went around the world to show everyone else how we do things properly. He bought into that philosophy. The way they tried to rewrite the history curriculum, there was a lot of pushback, really was indicative of his mindset. So a minister enforces his kind of constellation on a whole society. And then if you're someone who struggles with literacy, you're then labeled a failure. You know what I mean? A
Yeah.
third of kids are labeled a failure by the current exam system. So they go through life, I failed at school. Some of them might rise above that, but what are you saying to the society where you're doing that to one third and you're wondering why some of these people are struggling in life?
Yeah. I suppose historically it served the country or the ruling classes to have a bunch of people who are failures.
Yeah, and again, it dates back to the feudal system.
Yeah.
There's people here, you know your lot, and that's the natural order of things. I think modern conservatives wouldn't say that directly,
No,
but do you think
they're
it?
up for people rising above their station in life.
They'll say that, and they'll say it's up to you. You can do it now. It's much better. It's meritocratic, and there's some evidence of that. I mean, things are better, much better, but it's when they say, oh no, it's just down to you as an individual. That's the danger because you're writing off so many people.
Yeah, not recognizing the systemic influences, which is what I love about the constellations, is absolutely recognizing that impact of systemic influences that often you're not even consciously aware of. And it is both, it is down to one's personal decisions, but also there are all those other factors, aren't there?
Absolutely.